Hey folks, welcome everybody. It's Susan Baracco here today. Welcome to the B2B Launcher coaching call. Looks like we've got a nice group coming on the line here. Welcome, welcome, and especially to those of you who are brand new to the program. So happy to have you all here. Please type in the chat and say hello just so that I know that you can hear me. Want to make sure that all systems are go, everything's working properly. And Cynthia, hey, welcome. Esther, so glad you're here. Marie, Sally, and Shannon are here. Great. Thomas, glad to have you. Evan, Beth has also joined us. Hey, great. Glad you can hear me. Thank you, folks, for saying hello. And if you'd like, certainly type in a response to our just for fun question. If you're new to the program, the calls have an order of things. We kind of go in order, and we start with just something for fun, just to get people sharing information about themselves. It's kind of fun. It's amazing what we discover about each other when we're on these calls. And then we'll get into the question and answer period in just a little bit, but I have a couple of other questions that we start with just to kind of get us all used to talking on the chat and interacting. So I hope you've all come prepared with questions. Excited to hear from all of you and hear how you're doing. All right. And let me just see. HP. I see someone logged in as HP. If you would, and you responded with Montreal. if you would just type in the chat, let me know what your first name is, because I don't, that way I'll know how to address you. That would be great. Esther says she loves jazz. Me too. And Sally too. I love it. I'm a jazz fan too. I do. But Thomas says, I love all music, particularly love metal. Isn't that interesting? I love almost all music too. I think there's very little that I just don't enjoy. I enjoy country once in a while. I enjoy jazz. I love some of the pop stuff that's coming out. I have a real eclectic taste too, so kind of fun. Keegan, Evan's been listening to the blues. Cynthia, Christian music. I actually listen to a fair amount of Christian music too, Cynthia, so I have a pretty eclectic mix. All music, Shannon says. Not so much the new country. Yeah, same. I'm with you. I like the old stuff. All right. Well, it is a couple minutes after one, so I'm going to dive in. Thanks for all of you for being here. This is terrific. So nice to have a good group. When we have a big group, it's really makes it a lot more fun. And interesting. Thomas says, I could talk about music for hours. Me too. I could listen to it for hours. I listen to it while I work too. I put on piano music and different kinds of things while I'm working. Anyway, let's get on to our first question. And my question is, what has been a win for you recently? And please type a capital W in the chat before you respond. That way I know that you're answering that question. And it can be a big win. It can be a tiny win. It doesn't matter. But please share in the chat what's been a win for you in recent days, maybe the last week, maybe the last month. That's really been something that you feel particularly excited or proud of. That way we can all celebrate with you. Sally says, I just signed up for the training this morning. Yay! Good for you. That's a huge win, by the way. Congratulations. I can tell you, I've been working side by side with Ed now for, I think, a little over 2 years, helping him supporting these programs. And it's just amazing to see people come in and go through the program and have great success. So you have a lot of potential to really reach your goals. So congratulations for joining us, Sally. Glad you're here. Shannon says she's got 2 pages done on building her website and having a lot of fun with it. Yay. That's a huge win. I often say when I review websites that it's, you know, building your first website and having to write about yourself is probably one of the most challenging things that you'll have to do. It takes time. And so congratulations, Shannon. That's awesome. Oh, Evans has had my first discovery call with a potential client. Awesome. That is a big win. And if you would, Evan, type in also, let us know how that went. Just did it go well? Are you going on to next steps? Just let us know a little bit about if there's anything you would have done differently, something you didn't expect. Beth says, I joined yesterday. Hey, welcome, Beth. That's right. I think I just typed in, I think I welcomed you today on the Facebook page, Facebook group. So great. Excited to have you here. Chris says he's picked up two pro bono clients. Congratulations. That's excellent. Good for you. Pro bono clients are important in the beginning. Excellent, excellent. And I'm hoping that they're both in your target market, the industry that you want to be focusing on. And HP still would love to have your first name, HP, but win for you is realizing I don't have to have everything positively figured out. Yes, absolutely. This is a marathon, not a sprint. And you definitely want to take your time, take full advantage, especially for those of you who are brand new to this program. Please, 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 you've made an investment, you've made a commitment. Take full advantage of this program. Come to these calls, come prepared, be active on the in the Facebook group, ask questions, share your struggles and your wins on the Facebook group as well. Take full advantage. These programs that Ed designed, that Ed has built are really phenomenal and really can help you a great deal. So definitely keep that in mind. Esther says, I've developed my own website. Proud of this. Yes, I took a look at that today, Esther. So congratulations. Cynthia says her win is getting my website, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram and Twitter set up. Whew. That's a lot. That is a lot. Congratulations. That's it. That's a big win. Esther has a nice win here. Since I updated my LinkedIn profile, I've had some old colleagues connect with me. Looking forward to pursuing these further. Excellent. Good for you. Good for you. Evan, that update on the call that you had, it went well. Face-to-face meeting next week after this one on the phone. I do have questions about how to go about that, which I'm looking forward to sharing. Great. Yeah, let's definitely dive into that today, Evan. Hopefully, I can help you. Oh, John, hey, don't know why you're seeing HP. Me neither. HP, I'm thinking maybe is that the kind of computer you're on? Maybe it's the way it logged you in. But John, thank you for letting me know that's you. Thomas says, no wins recently, fell off course due to some family stuff. Happens, life happens. Trying to get back in the swing of sending out emails to potential clients. Good, 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 good. So the number one thing to think about when it comes to emails and sending out emails, and for those of you who are new, you're not there yet in that part of the program. But for those of you who are, the one word to remember is consistency. And I don't care if you send out one email a day. Do it every day. So consistency. So give yourself a pass there, Thomas. Life happens. It happens to all of us. Just get back in the swing. Even if you send out one or two emails a day, that's better than none. And just stick with that and ramp back up slowly. And that might be a little easier for you. Awesome. Well, I am next interested in hearing where you are and what material you're implementing. And so for those of you who are brand new, obviously you're just getting started. If you just joined us in the last day or two, in the last couple of days, you're probably just in the welcome stage, going through the welcome material and then maybe even into session one. But please type in the capital I again so that I know what we're I want to know where you are, and that'll help me as I work with all of you today and we answer questions, because I like to add lots of value in these calls for the folks, not only for those of you who are able to join us today, but lots of people listen to the recordings because they're working full time, maybe can't make it, have a conflict. So it's helpful for me to know where you are, and then I can tailor my responses and my feedback for you accordingly. So Sally says, just watch the welcome video. And Marie says, I'm sending out emails to the three different groups Ed helped identify and solid prospects. Great. Great, great, great. Esther is working through session 5 already. Good for you. And I see that you have a question there about subject lines. Let me just pull up that information. So Esther, what I would recommend if you want is to post that question in the Facebook group and get some feedback. I think you'd find that really helpful because then there's a lot, there's only 11 people on the call here. You'll get a lot more feedback if you post that in the Facebook group, but certainly welcome to posting it here. All right. And if you're in session 5, there should be some, session 5 is all about warm email prospecting with templates and all of that, so that you should have some good examples of subject lines in session 5. So hopefully you haven't quite gotten there yet. Evan says, I'm starting to talk to potential clients and using the question scripts from session 6. Excellent. I'm hoping you're finding those helpful. I think they're incredibly helpful when you really just don't know what to ask in the beginning. Cynthia just completed the starter list. Great. Chris is also in session 6, sending emails, finding and qualifying prospects. Great. And John, no, it didn't change, but that's okay. As long as I know who you are. Shannon says she's 1 week into session 2. Hope to have my website ready for review next week, then on to updating LinkedIn. Great. And Thomas, so I finished all the sessions, but I'm reviewing them, especially the sessions on LinkedIn and prospecting and not yet ready potentials. Don't hesitate to go back and review things again. Absolutely. That's why you have access to it. You can always go back. It's amazing when you go through it, especially if it's been a little while, Thomas, if you've been away from this, you go back, you might see things that you didn't see the first time. I find that often when I go back through training. It's amazing what comes out like, ooh, I don't think I saw that the first time. You just, you know, you tend to focus on specific things and sometimes you overlook things inadvertently. So good idea to go back through. All right. Well, let's dive into the questions. And I hope you're ready. I hope you all have some questions ready. What I would like is for you to type in a capital Q to be sure that I don't miss your question, because we've got a good group here today and the chat is active. That's fabulous. But I want to make sure that I don't miss it. So please remember to type in a capital Q. Keep your question focused and specific. And one question per person. Because we do have a good group. I want to be able to get to everyone today, but we can always come back around. And if applicable, tell me what you're considering in order to solve the challenge that you're facing. All right. People are jumping right in. I love it. Good, good. And Shannon is first in line with a question. And she says, I'm currently working on building my website and was wondering, is there ever a point where you would recommend putting a pricing sheet on your website? I understand that fees for specific projects can vary quite a bit, but just something to give prospective clients an idea of what price range they'd be looking at for different types of projects. So great question, Shannon. This is, you know, if you're out there and you're looking at competitors' websites, which by the way, I would recommend you all do, is go out and Google different types of writers, especially in your industry or your same niche, your target market, see what's out there, see how they're presenting themselves, especially as you're developing your own message, your own website, all of that stuff. It's good to just take a look and see what's out there, because you'll see websites and you go, ooh, I wouldn't do that. Or you might find others that you think, wow, I'm going to copy that. I'm going to borrow that format or that style. So definitely take some time and poke around and do a little work. But one of the things that I strongly recommend, and I know I believe Ed recommends against this too, is don't put pricing on your website ever. And there's a couple of reasons, and you've touched on it already, Shannon. You understand that every client is different. Every project is different. So I can't tell you, even just writing an email series, an email series is an email series. You're going to have five, let's say there's five emails in that series and you're getting ready to write that. But there's so much to it based on every single client, because every single client has a different level of savvy, is how I like to put it, marketing savvy. So some clients will come to you and they'll tell you exactly what they want, exactly how they want it to look. They're very put together. They're very organized and they're sophisticated in terms of their understanding of what they want to accomplish. Then you've got the opposite end of that spectrum where people are just not at all sophisticated. They'll say, geez, I think I want an email series, but I have no idea what I want it to look like. Right. So you're going to, so the amount of effort you're going to put into that, that person's project is a lot different. You might have to do research. You might have to interview people to gather information. There's all different kinds of things that come into play. So that's number one, is that they, honestly, everything that you do is going to be kind of custom, really and truly, from a pricing perspective. The other thing is that numbers send a message. If you're too low, you're sending a message. If you're too high, you're sending a message. And the thing that you don't want people doing, and I made this mistake. I tell you, I'm raising my hand and saying, I did this. I put my prices on my website thinking, well, I want to eliminate the tire kickers or people who are looking for, you know, to hire somebody on Fiverr or something like that. That's just super cheap, the lowest, you know, lowest price available, lowest cost available. But then I realized that people hire people. And when I get on a call with a potential client, once I have a chance to talk with them, we're good. Like I have the work. And I think a lot of you are going to find that same thing, is that once you start talking one-on-one with someone, all of a sudden you start building that relationship. You start really, you answer their questions. You're able to establish a relationship that then all of a sudden price isn't quite as important. And that's really an important thing to think about, Shannon, in terms of don't put your prices out there, because it's not going to, I can guarantee you that you could put, let's say you put down $500 for a blog article. One visitor is going to look at that and say, oh my gosh, that's crazy expensive. The next visitor is going to look at that and say, oh my gosh, she's so cheap. You know, so again, the person that's looking at your website, looking at these prices, they're going to have a different, it's the same price, but you got two completely different responses when they looked at that. So there's many, many reasons not to put your prices up there. You will find competitors who have their prices out there, which is kind of nice, because then you can see, where should I be? And give yourself a sense of what's going on. But I would advise against it. And I know Ed would too. We both feel that this is about a one-to-one connection and making a really strong connection with your clients and them hiring you because they like you, not because of your prices. I hope that makes sense. I hope that's helpful. All right. And Evan, you're next up. So Evan's question, I'd like to hear more about best practices for preparing for writing for new writing projects. Specifically, how do we generate content when we don't yet know the potential client's business very well? The questions for project kickoff calls document is helpful in this regard, but I'd like to hear more because I anticipate this initial work being a make or break aspect of most projects. You're absolutely correct about that. So how do you ensure you are able to collect all the necessary information up front? Target market, competitive advantages, competitors, et cetera. And cap the amount of time this takes. Does this pre-work factor into what you charge for the project? So yes, 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 and yes. So very, very quick little answer there, but yes. So all that pre-work does figure in. So here's what you want to think about. And in regards to putting together some type of a document to guide you to ask good questions. And this takes time. And if you're brand new, which many of you are, if you've never worked on a project before, this can be a challenge. This is definitely something that's challenging. I would start by using the questions that Ed provides in the program, like you were talking about. And one of the things that you're going to learn is that if you get your first project, if it's a pro bono project, that's perfect because you can kind of find your way and the pressure's off a little bit more. You go through one project and you're going to know, okay, I didn't ask enough questions here and there, the next thing. But what you want to do is look at I like to look at each project from a responsibility perspective. And this might help you to formulate additional questions. So who's going to do what and when? So it's really, think of it as a project management type of an approach. So I am going to do this by this date, right? And so you want to look at the project and you want to, when you're talking to your client, say, well, are you going to do the research or would you like me to do the research? Are you going to provide background information or am I going to have to, you know, find that where do I find that? Yes or no. So you want to kind of look at this from a project management perspective. Who's going to do what and when? And that should help you to get a better sense of what kind of questions you want to ask. Due dates are really important in that, so don't overlook that piece. So if you want this website done by X date, then we work backwards from there to say, you know, to set your date. And that's the other thing too, as you're building this, as you're thinking about this, is to kind of work backwards. Say, okay, so we want a website and we want to have it up and running. Is someone going to be editing? Who's going to be providing? Think about everything that goes into a website. Many of you are in the process of building your website or already have, or just getting started. Who's providing the images? Who's providing the background information? And when will I receive that? Or, you know, who's building it out? That kind of thing. So you want to just think about those kinds of details on a kind of a granular level. To really think through, what do I need to know? Are there going to be interviews involved? And the thing of it is, like, are you going to get a chance to interview your prospect, your client's customers to get their feedback? Or maybe you're going to be talking to or interviewing people within their company to get more perspective and more background on a particular topic. So there's lots of different things, that components that come into play depending on the project you're working on. But you can use that same outline. Once you develop it, you can use the same outline, the same set of questions, because all of your projects are going to need to have the same information. So I hope that was helpful. Marie, you're next in line with a question. Last time you said you spend time every day on LinkedIn and get about 80% of your business there. What exactly should I be doing each day? Good question. Let me see. And Marie, I'm just going to scroll back. So I think. No, I'm not sure how far you are in the program, but there's LinkedIn training in session 5. I'm not sure if you're that far in the program yet, but the session 5 has a couple of extra LinkedIn trainings. And in those trainings, the ones that I recorded, and in those trainings, you will see some suggestions for how to reach out. But right now, what you want to be doing, two things, Marie, that you want to be spending your time on with LinkedIn is growing your network in your target market. So you want to be adding people to your network, whether it's colleagues, someone you already know. Make sure you're connected to people you already know, and also doing some research. You want to be spending time looking at companies and people. So searching for people by their title and their industry, and making a list, making sure that you're connecting with people that you think might be a good target. So that's a lot of what you want to be doing right now on LinkedIn, is just starting to reach out and grow your connection base. Right? So the number of people that you're connected to. And the other thing would be, and that's why I recommended the training, because there's a lot of detail in there about the right way to invite people, the best way to reach out, that kind of thing. So I strongly recommend you spend a little bit of time. I think we have it broken down where they're both like maybe a half an hour each, I think the trainings, somewhere around that. So feel free to, you know, to jump on there and go through it. But LinkedIn is it's an amazing tool for finding and connecting with the right people who can either refer you or who are potential clients for you. And I definitely would recommend that you, again, take that training, but also spend time on it every day. And you don't have to spend a lot of time, you know, spend hours out there on LinkedIn, but enough time where you're feeling like, and you could even set a goal for yourself. Say, okay, so today I want to connect with 3 potential new clients. or maybe I want to research and find and create a list of five new potential clients that I'd like to reach out to, something like that. So have set a reasonable small goal for yourself each day. It doesn't have to be huge. Again, this is a marathon, not a sprint. We want to take our time and be selective about the kinds of people that we're reaching out to and connecting with. You also could look for partners. So you might want to look for agencies or maybe web designers to connect with, because they need content writers, right? That kind of thing. So maybe PR professionals or other marketing professionals, that kind of thing, people that you might want to start networking and connecting with as a source of referrals. So those are just a couple of ideas. I hope that helps. And so when I say I get 80% of my business there, so I get a ton of referrals. Honestly, my business is all referrals. And some of it comes from, I've been having a lot more people finding me on LinkedIn and finding me through LinkedIn and reaching out to me there. Kind of interesting, but that has taken me time to develop. So, all right. All right, Cynthia, next up with a question. I've signed up for linked selling. It's not ready to go yet. Have you any experience with linked selling versus LinkedIn? Cynthia, I'm not 100% sure. I think that linked selling is actually a program, a paid program that teaches you how to use LinkedIn. I believe that's what it is. And I think I may have looked at some of their, I do follow a couple of different LinkedIn experts, if you will, or programs that just have good information about LinkedIn and updates and things like that as the tool changes, which it does pretty frequently. So it's not, I don't think it's linked selling versus LinkedIn, I believe. And Cynthia, feel free to type in additional clarification, but linked selling, I believe, is a training program for LinkedIn. Awesome. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for being active and having lots of questions. This is great. It's helpful for everyone. Chris, you're next. And Chris's question, what do you do when you've offered a lot of prospects free work but don't hear back from them much later in your own launch? Do you still do pro bono work? So Chris, it's interesting because the whole question of pro bono work has come up recently, and I know I was answering a question on Facebook, in the Facebook group, I believe, about pro bono. Something that you want to use strategically, and you can use it at any time in your career, if you will, as a writer, as a freelance writer. So pro bono work is not something that you want to take a lot of. You want to take enough to get you started. And your pro bono work should be, I like to say, keep it in your back pocket as an option when you're talking to people and when you're talking to prospects. Because if it's a client that you really want to work with, that you know would be a perfect fit, it might be something that you want to offer that as a, geez, you know what? I'd really like this project. I know I haven't written a case study before, but I'd be willing to do it for you for pro bono, right? So you're making that offer, but you want to use that carefully because it's going to get a foot in the door for you. And that's the idea of pro bono work, is to get you more good samples for your website, right? You want to build your portfolio, and you also want to make sure that you're using it again. It's a client that you really want to work with, you really want to do business with, and maybe they're feeling unsure because you're new or something like that. Maybe there's some kind of a thing where you're sensing some hesitation and say, you know what, I'd really be thrilled to work with you. Would you consider doing this project pro bono? And most of the time they're going to say yes. That's a good thing. So you can use it at any point in your career. It's up to you. Sometimes I see people use it if they want to pivot. So what ends up happening is that, and for those of you who are new to this this program, don't worry about pivoting right now. What I want you to really focus on is identifying your target market and moving forward with that decision. Because at some point, months down the road, if you find out as you start working with that market, maybe it's not what you thought it would be. Maybe you're not enjoying it, that kind of thing. Don't worry about it because you can always pivot. And I've done that a few times over the course of my career, which I'm going into my seventh year, I think, doing this. So what I would recommend is that you use that, again, keep it in your back pocket. And maybe you decide, you know what, I think I'm working on healthcare. Maybe I've decided to target healthcare, some kind of healthcare. But maybe now I'm ready to branch out a little bit and maybe do healthcare tech. You know, maybe you want to start inching your way into a slightly different part of healthcare. That's where, again, you could use that pro bono offer to get your foot in the door with a potential client. So, but use it carefully, use it strategically, and use it sparingly. So you want it to obviously get you some experience, get you some samples for your portfolio, all of those things, get you some great experience, but you don't want to fill your calendar with pro bono work. That's not a good thing, right? We want to be really careful about that. And we don't want to just, you know, kind of throw it out there. Hey, I'm doing free work for anybody who wants it. That's not a great approach. You want to just, again, think strategy. How do I want to use this? Because as you start going through this program, the idea is for you to get your first paying client and then another and another. You want to make sure that you have room in your calendar and in your schedule to take the paid work. That's where you really want to get, because that's going to make a big difference in your business and in your confidence and your momentum. The paid work really is a game changer. So yeah, you can still do pro bono work, but you might, like I said, just be careful about it. I hope that was helpful, Chris. All right, Esther, you're next up with a question, and you put up two. I'm going to just answer one and then I'll come back to it, back to your second. So Esther's question, is it a good idea to develop templates for the specific project type? In other words, brochures versus website build out. This seems like it would help with making sure I consistently get the detail I need. So templates for a specific project, you can do that. I know people who do that. It might even be something like a checklist. You know, you might develop some kind of a checklist. Here's my checklist for websites. Here's my checklist for email campaigns. Here's my checklist for blog posts, you know, just so that you're sure. But I wouldn't overdo it, Esther. I'd be just, you know, something that's going to be a tool that's going to be helpful for you. But don't make yourself crazy trying to put together something, because what you're going to find is that your checklists are going to be similar. The few things that might be a little bit different from, you know, a website, you might need slightly different information, obviously, than if you were just writing a blog. So, but your checklist is going to be, I would do your basic, I'd do one checklist and then break it in sections. So these are the questions I need no matter what I'm working on. I need these answered, right? And then for a website, these are the additional questions. For a blog, these are the additional questions. So you're just kind of doing add-ons per the type of project that you're working on. So use your base questions for every single project, because you're going to be asking those same questions. And on that, you're also going to be thinking about, the other thing I would recommend that all of you think about and consider is having some strategy questions in there. And you'll hear me talk about strategy a lot. I am a huge fan of strategy. I am a huge fan of being a consultant to my clients. So, and this might take a little bit of time, especially if you're new, if you're just ramping up, this might take a little bit of time, but you could also ask some questions about, you know, do you have a marketing strategy? What's your, you know, what's your plan for, and this is a good time of year to be asking people, you know, what's your plan for first quarter of 2020 or for 2020 as a whole? What are your goals and what's your strategy for the year ahead? So it's a good thing to reach out and ask those kinds of questions. I hope that was helpful. Wow, wow, wow. Look at all these questions. It's great. Okay. And Esther, you know what? We've got a bunch of questions coming up behind here. So, and your second question is pretty quick, so I'm just going to address it right now. Would writing posts on LinkedIn be a good way to gain more exposure and credibility? Yes. How do I go about determining what is a good topic to write about? What I usually recommend for people who are looking to put some things out there, and LinkedIn, I think, is a great place to put. I don't post as much as I should. I was pretty consistent for a while, and then I kind of tapered off, but it's a great place to get exposure. So think about your industry. Think about your target market. And I would say start with like the top five things, the top five mistakes that you see companies in your target market make with anything related to marketing. So for example, a technical company, their blogs are too technical, or maybe their marketing materials are way too technical and dry and boring and nobody wants to read them. That's a common, and then how do you solve that problem? So you could write a brief article about, you know, mistake number one, this is the mistake, this is what I see companies doing, and then here's a solution. Here's how I would address that. So you're showcasing your knowledge of the industry and you're showcasing your knowledge of how to solve problems. So I hope that's helpful. All right. So Chris, I think you're next up in line. You have another question here. This question is, I have a client who potentially needs a lot of writing. Great. He's given me a brief idea of who his customers are, given me his About Us page and said, here, have at it. Am I setting myself up by not asking him more questions? I know if I do, it will delay the project. So there's a trade-off in regards to this, Chris, and it sounds like actually I'm hoping that I can, let me just see, Chris, if you're here, because I do have a question for you. There you are. I'm going to unmute you, Chris, because I do have a question for you. Hey there.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Sorry about the background noise. I'm at Panera here.
Oh, no problem. No problem. So question for you in regards to this, is this a pro bono client or is this someone that's going to pay you for this? I just want to make sure I understand what the relationship is that you have with this client.
It's a pro bono client. It seems like he'd be more than willing to pay me. But so, for example, this About Us pay, I think he's, and maybe even it's more so me than him, but he's kind of looking at just some kind of proof of concept. In other words, a good feeling that I'm going to be able to help him.
Absolutely. Yeah. Makes sense. Well,
he has told me a little bit more than what I make it look like.
Put there. Yeah. No, understood. So what I would recommend that you do, because it's pro bono, is to set a very strict limit around what you'll do. And especially if he's got a lot more writing that he, you know, it sounds like you've got the sense like, hey, this guy might actually pay me. So that's cool. So what I would go back to him and say, look, spend some time kind of reviewing what we talked about. And here's what I propose. I propose that I do X for you. Maybe it's write three blogs to get us started as a trial. So because what you want to do is say, I'd like to make sure that we're a good fit. And so that way I limit it to three articles. I do them pro bono. If you're satisfied, then we'll talk about what your needs are moving forward and what I would charge. Right. So you're putting a parameter around that. And then
Given me this.
Okay.
So should I say, I don't want to do this or.
So he wants you to write an About Us page.
He has one, and you're what you were saying before about technical companies being too technical.
Yeah,
that pretty much nails what he has, right?
Yep.
So I've kind of, and granted, I enjoy doing this, but I kind of went in and had to learn what he's talking about, and now I think I'm ready to simplify it to appeal to his target market. So I don't want to dismiss what he's asked me to do.
No, not at all. Not at all. So see, he wants you to rewrite his web copy?
Yes.
Or okay. All
yes.
right. That's
yes.
what I misunderstood. Okay, good. Oh, I'm glad you brought you on. So yeah. I would tell him, look, I'll do these three pages on your website, or you know, maybe just the about us. Is it just the about us he wants you to rewrite?
Yes.
Or is it the okay?
Yes.
Oh, that's perfect then. Yeah, that's perfect because it's a one-off thing. And the other thing I would do is make sure that you go and find. So here's a great question for everyone to add to their list of questions. Who are your biggest competitors? Then what you're going to do is you're going to go to that competitor's website and see how they're talking about themselves and see what you can learn, right? Because that'll teach you as you're learning the industry. So there's a question to add to your list of questions for your client. So, but that way you have a good understanding of also how to make this your client different. So what do you like? The other question might be, is there a competitor or someone in your industry that whose approach you really like? Is there someone that you admire in the terms of the way they market themselves? That's another good question to ask because you, again, want to be able to go out and do that research and say, oh, okay, you know, I want to craft something similar. So I would absolutely go back to him and say, you know what? I've looked over your About Us, kind of dug in, thought about it. Here's what I recommend. Here's what I'll do. Again, and then if we decide, you know, if this works out, we're happy with each other, you know, that we find we click and we can work together well, then we can talk about projects moving forward. But I would definitely recommend that you keep everything, you know, you said he potentially has a lot of writing needs. Great. Break it down into smaller projects because you don't want him to get lost and overwhelmed. You don't want you to get lost and overwhelmed in the, oh my gosh, he needs all this stuff done. Let's start small, chunk it down so that you can get paid for that. So I'll, you know, I'll charge, this is my fee to do three blog articles for you or something like that. And let's see how that goes. And then there's the flat fee. You move on. You finish that. You have a due date and you move on.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good luck. Keep us posted.
Okay. Sure will.
Thanks. Awesome. Great question. So keep in mind that part of our job, even though we're writers and that's our gig and our thing, and we're really good at writing and we're really good at helping to promote our clients, a big part of what we have to do is manage our clients. So you want to make sure that as you start to get into this, and again, don't worry too much about it right now, but be thinking about how do I manage my client? How do I make sure that and for me, I'm all about managing expectations and being really clear as you develop your list of questions for your client and for your client interviews when you start working with someone new is to make sure that you're clear on expectations. Clear about how many times that you're going to edit a particular piece. You know, how many times you'd be willing, like even Chris, for you with this About Us page, this will include two revisions. I'll rework it and then I'll revise it twice, up to twice, right? Free of charge. That's part of your pro bono package. So you want to include how many times will you revise it. Trust me, I've gotten stuck in that little in that little ditch, that little hole in the road where you're moving along and then the next thing you know, no, can you tweak it a little more? You know, I really don't like that, you know. And week after week after week, you're constantly making changes. You got to really, you know, again, you're managing expectations and you're managing the project well, and that's part of it, so. All right. So Thomas, you're up next. How do you ask a client to use the project you do for them as a sample for your portfolio? Good question. One of the things that I recommend is to make it a normal part of business for you. So you're going to include it in an agreement. If you get to a point where you're actually a paying client and you're sending them a project agreement, so that you both know this is what I'm going to do and this is how much you're going to pay me. In that agreement, you want to include wording along the lines of, you know, client acknowledges and acknowledges the fact that the work completed here will be used for in marketing and as part of a writer's portfolio. marketing on the writer's website and in their portfolio, something like that. So you want to make sure that that's part of your agreement in a more formal manner. And if you're just talking to a client and you're discussing, here's a couple of the things, maybe you're asking these questions, you're having a good conversation and things have gone well, you can say, just want to let you know that as a normal part of my process, I use the work that I create and produce for my clients as part of my portfolio. Just want to let you know that I'll be doing that. And depending on how that goes, most of the time people will nod and say, oh, okay. You know, that's, they're just going to be fine with it. Some, but you want to disclose it in discussions because you want to make sure that if you don't want to just use it, you want to make sure you have their permission. But it, and that's why I'm saying it needs to be part of your agreement when you get to the point where you're actually creating an agreement for a, to work with a client, a paid client. If you are not there yet, then you definitely want to just be comfortable with saying, you know, as a normal course of my business, any materials that I produce, I use as part of my portfolio on my website. Just want to let you know that and leave it at that. So you're not really asking permission. You're just kind of saying, hey, just want to let you know it's a normal course of business for me to do that. And hopefully that will help you just kind of slide that in. And make sure, or you could even say, are you, is that acceptable to you? Is there any part of it that you don't want me to use? I wouldn't start by saying that because you don't want to give them the idea that they can say no. I like to make sure to just make it sound, yep, normal course of business. I use anything I generate as part of my portfolio. And they might stop and say, oh, you know what? I'd rather you didn't use this, you know, or if something that's obviously that you're writing for them. Sometimes white papers, people can be, you know, maybe a little bit, depending on what the white paper covers, different types of things. But that I would just make it a matter of fact. This is part of the way I do business and keep it simple that way, Thomas. Hopefully that'll work for you. All right, so Marie, you're next up. Every day I get notices and offers from different trainings and courses from AWAI and others. I don't know how to evaluate these offers. Many of them offer skills training, but also access to famous practitioners in the particular specialty. If you can find the skills training elsewhere for free, do you think it's worth it to sign up and pay in order to meet the renowned practitioner with the hope of impressing that person? Would it be a big boost? So I think, Marie, one of the things that I would just suggest is that you be careful. One of the things that I have seen with people who come through this program is that we get distracted easily thinking that, oh, we need another training. And part of my role here working with Ed and supporting this program, and you will see, is that I follow up with people who've stopped progress in the B2B Launcher program. That's part of my job. And it's interesting because what I hear back from people sometimes is, oh, sometimes life gets in the way. You know, you've got a family emergency, you've got, you know, something happens and you get off track. Happens, it's okay. It's really okay. That's what life is presents to us as we build our businesses. It's you're not going to be alone in that, believe me. But sometimes I get emails back from people when I followed up, and they say, "Oh well, geez, I started this program and I started that program," and they're just getting so overwhelmed or distracted that they actually lost track and now don't have the time to finish the B2B Launcher program. So number one, pick a program and invest yourself. You've already invested your dollars. You've made the commitment to be in this program. Invest everything you have in this program and get through it. Because right now you are in the beginning of your business. Your skills are not, I'm not going to say they're not important because that's not true. Your skills are very important. But right now, what I want you to focus on is getting through the B2B Launcher program all the way to the end and get your first client. That's what you should be focused on. Be careful of those shiny objects, shiny object syndrome. I'm sure many of you have heard of that before. Be careful about that. Be careful that there's always going to be those programs out there. Now, talking about some renowned practitioner, my question to you in regards to that would be, to what end? So let's imagine that I get to connect with some man or woman who's you know, been wildly successful in the same industry or in the same, you know, area of work that I'm focused on. What would I hope to gain from that? So if I invest the money into that program to be connected with that person, then what? What do I get out of it? What's my ROI? What do I get out of that connection? Do you think they're going to funnel you business? Do you think they're going to teach you something about the industry? Yes. So in some cases, like I've done this myself, I invested in a program for ghostwriters, which is what I do. I ghostwrite books. I'm an editor and ghostwriter, so I help people write their books. And so I invested in a program that taught me how to be a better ghostwriter. But it was at a time, the timing was right. I wasn't in three other programs too. It was, you know what? I've decided to pivot in this direction. This is the way I want to go. And this, I know this gentleman, it was actually a gentleman that partnered with Ed. So I had been in one of Ed's other programs. And then this offer came through and it was perfect timing because I had nothing else going on. And I was able to immerse myself in that one program and get, and just wring every drop out of that program that I possibly could. Be careful not to overdo it. That's, I guess that's my bottom line comment there. I want you to continue to educate yourself, continue to learn, and continue to take classes, to continue to find other programs to take, but not too many all at the same time, because it's going to get you off track. I promise it will get you off track. So stick with this, get through it. This isn't a super long program. Start, plan on jumping on one of these other ones in first quarter of 2020 after you've completed your B2B launcher program. That's cool. Go for it. Absolutely. If you think that there's true and significant value in connecting with that person and learning from them, yeah, do it. But make sure that you're prioritizing, that you're keeping things in order and that you're not letting too many of these things. There was one gentleman that came through B2B Launcher and he'd jump on Facebook and say, oh, well, I signed up for this course. I'm taking this now. And he was stuck and he wasn't really moving through the B2B launcher course, but he was taking all these other classes and I don't even know if he ever finished the B2B course. It was heartbreaking. It's like, oof, gosh, you got so off track. So just know that those offers are always going to be out there and that you'll have an opportunity to pick up on that type of a training when the timing is right. But I wouldn't recommend that you do that right now. I really would recommend that for the next couple of weeks, you know, just crank through this program, get everything out of it that you can, and then decide, all right, where do I need the most support? What skills do I think I want to build? Again, you want to be really mindful and strategic. Like, what skill do I want to learn how to write white papers? And maybe I've never done one. Maybe I really want that skill. Go for it, but not right this minute because it's going to distract you. I hope that's helpful. All right. And Evan, you have a question up here. I'm going to skip over you just for a sec because I know you had another one and Beth posted her first question. So Beth, your question is, I see your a LinkedIn premium level. That's correct. And is buying into premium a must? Sorry if this is covered in the sessions. I'm new. Yes, you are new. It's okay. And yes, it's covered in the sessions, but you won't see that until you get to session 5. That's where my LinkedIn training is. Very briefly, when it comes to LinkedIn, one of the things to keep in mind, is that 2 years ago now? Probably right around 2 years ago, Microsoft bought LinkedIn. And since then, Microsoft has been changing, monkeying with the free account. And with the intention of slowly starting to restrict the amount of functionality at that free level to encourage you to pay. That being said, that's normal. That's the way all online platforms are. They'll give you an entry level for free, but it's very limited in its functionality. And so the question is, how are you going to use LinkedIn? And are you reaching a limit, limits in your search and in the way you're using LinkedIn at a free level? And that's when you reach that point, that's the tipping point for me. And that's should be the tipping point for you too. If you're logging into LinkedIn, you're using it actively, and you're finding that you're running out of, because LinkedIn will limit like the number of searches you can do after a certain, it's a pretty big, pretty fairly high number, even at the free level. but then it'll, you'll be bumping, and they, that may have changed actually. They've made a lot of changes fairly recently. So, and in terms of restricting functionality. So you could still search at a free level. You still can reach out and connect to people at a free level. I recommend use LinkedIn until you use it up. And when you start bumping into a lot of things that are preventing you from using it further, because you need to, and they'll very conveniently say, hey, so if you want to do more, just pay. and they'll let you know. Then it's time to consider. And so the other reason that I say that is because the number one thing you want to do is use it till you use it up, the free one. But then decide, has it been working for me? Is it a platform that I want to invest in? To a point where I've been getting enough work and I've been getting enough traction from LinkedIn that it's time for me to invest. For me, absolutely worth every dime, honestly. And if you think about it, like I'm at the premium level, I think it's $60 a month. So what are we talking? You know, $700-$800 a year. That's really not a lot of money for what I get out of it. If I get one lead. And I actually get, you know, my business is structured a little differently than what you folks are doing. But let's say you get 5 leads. It's more than covered the cost of that marketing tool. And I look at LinkedIn as a marketing tool. It's a lifeline for me to be able to connect with all the right targets. And so that's what I would recommend, Beth, is to kind of make sure that you're using it thoroughly, and then make sure that you're getting, and then assess at that point, you know, am I getting leads? If I'm not getting leads, if you're not getting leads, then I would say that you might not be using LinkedIn properly and quite right. That's why I'm saying go through the training in session 5 and be on LinkedIn every day. Really and truly, it's a great tool for building as a writer. It's an important tool for building your business. And, Ed also has some other LinkedIn trainings, I think, there might be one other in the program that he has, and there's some handouts. So I hope that answers your question, Beth. I hope that was helpful. Evan, I'll come back to your question now. How do you derive success criteria for a given project? If I invoice at the end of a project without a defined success criteria in the contract, then it would be subjective to measure the client's satisfaction, and this would interfere with a happy referenceable customer. Are there any examples you could share around specific success criteria? So I got away from success criteria a long time ago because that really can paint you into a corner you don't want to be painted into. And so I prefer to go with straight up milestones. So I get half up front. I don't do a single thing until your check clears for a down payment. And then the second half of the project, or maybe it's progress payments after that. So because the minute you start tying the client satisfaction to what you've done, it's almost impossible to create criteria to quantify or qualify that, right? How do you say, well, if the client's happy, they could use that to their advantage and not to yours, if you know what I mean. So I could never be happy. Well, you know what? Rewrite it again, we'll see. Rewrite it again, we'll see. Rewrite it again, we'll see. Really? Like, how many times are you going to let that happen? There's ways to prevent. So one of the things that you want to think about, Evan, in particular, is protecting yourself. And I, like I said, I got away from the success thing. I understand exactly what you're saying because I did that in the beginning, and then I realized I'm getting beat up here. You know, I mean, I've done a great job. I've given them great content, but you know, if they're smart, they might realize, well, you know what, I'm not in a rush to pay that because, you know, I want you to revise it 3 more times. Some people will take advantage of you that way. Not everybody, and really great clients would never do that to you. And there's plenty of really great clients out there. So I don't mean to send you in a direction that that feels bad, like all your clients are going to try and rip you off. That's not true. Not true at all. Some will. I have lost my share of money in the last 7 years in the beginning, early on, because I was really foolish and didn't I didn't do a good job of protecting myself. So this for me is more about making sure that I get paid for the work I'm doing and the work I'm going to do. And as a brand new person in this, this might feel a little bit uncomfortable to you, but I would definitely recommend that you go with progress payments instead. So maybe $500 up front, maybe it's a $2,000 project. Give me $1,000 up front or $500 up front, or maybe four payments of $500 just due every other week. Regardless of what happens to the project, the only time that those progress payments would be affected is if the project is at a standstill. But if it's moving forward, so your client's going to have to pay you whether they're cooperating or not. And so there's so much involved with these projects that I would recommend going in a direction of, you know, it's a great question. So success criteria, yeah. I don't know how to define that. Every customer is different. So go with progress payments based on the calendar and you'll never go wrong. It's a better option for you. And now if you want to do some success criteria, just as a follow-up to say, hey, so how would you rate me on this, that, or the next thing? You can always do that, especially with a happy client. You could do a kind of a wrap-up meeting that says, all right, give me on a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate my responsiveness or this or that or the next thing? And then you can use that for, you know, as a testimonial for your website as well. And then ask permission to do that, something along those lines. But I wouldn't tie it to payments. And John also answering Marie, thanks for adding that in. Marie, felt overwhelmed with all the options. Yes. Yeah, you know, there's always another course out there that you could take. There's always another, you know, one at a time. Really do one at a time, unless there's some very specific thing that you think you're going to get benefit from, Marie. Like I said, you know, you want to start writing white papers and you want to take a course on that. Cool. But again, I would wait until you get yourself settled, get through this course, and then tackle some of those things. Chris says he's thinking of taking AWI's email list, taking yourself off of AWI. Every day they have a new must-have. That's, you know, honestly, Chris, AWAI, they're practicing what they preach, right? Or what they teach. They teach you how to be a really good marketing writer, and then they're using their same techniques on you. So it's great, actually, to get those emails because you think, their writing style is really compelling, isn't it? We're stopping everything we do and we're reading these emails going, huh, should I take that class? Gosh, I really think I should. They're the masters. They know how to write very compelling marketing copy. If for nothing else, put it in your clips file, you know, to hang on to some of the way that there's one that's just really got you on the edge of your seat thinking maybe I should take this. Keep that copy just in your clips file to learn from, if nothing else. But they're the masters. That's what they teach you how to do. So Sally says, I've been saving my favorite long letters from AWI, turning them into PDF through my printer software. Good for you. Awesome. All right. I'm going to just scan back here. What time is it? It's 2:00. We've got a little bit of time left. I just want to make sure I didn't miss anyone. Feel free. We still have time for a few more questions. All right, got some couple more good questions here. So Chris, you're next, and you've got lots of questions today. I love it. AWAI talks about payments based on ROI from sales letters. Is that feasible in the web world? No. not necessarily. Now, if you're talking about a landing page, which is, and I believe that's probably what you're talking about here, you could do that. You absolutely could do that the same way. So a sales letter that might go out, maybe it's an email format, a sales letter that's turned into an email, or a sales landing page. You could definitely do ROI. You could definitely do a cut of, you know, product sold, that kind of thing. That's absolutely, that does translate into the web world. All right. So Beth, another question for Beth, not to jump the gun, but does my company need its own bank account? Should I open one in the expectation I'll have clients shortly? Absolutely. You should have your own bank account, regardless of what size you are or what size. You definitely want to keep that separate from an accounting perspective. At the end of the year, you will thank you and your accountant will thank you for keeping that separate. I have had a separate bank account since day one. I've actually opened and closed bank accounts a couple times because I started and stopped businesses, that kind of thing. But now I have a bank account. It's very separate from my, so that all the transactions that happen there are related only to my business. And it's very, very easy to account for. So from an accounting perspective, really important. Most banks these days, and you could just do one online through, I think there's a couple of different banks that offer things just online. You don't necessarily have to go in and that kind of thing. It's up to you. I would recommend you consider it. Do you have to rush to do it? Not necessarily, but you know, open it with $100 or something. I think you can get, most of them have a minimum balance that you need to keep in there. Find one that's fee-free so that you're not getting charged monthly for anything. I do not get any kind of service charges in mine. And I think it's a good idea because then as you start to accept payments, you want to be able to do that under a business name. You can use your own name. I mean, that's fine, but it might not be a bad idea to look at it starting a separate, definitely starting a separate account. It'll be a lot easier for you in the long run. All right. Sally's question, roughly on average, how long does this particular program take people to go through? So that's a really difficult question, Sally, because some people that come in to this program work full time. And they're trying to start a side gig, trying to start a writing, freelance writing business on the side. So for them, it takes longer, but it shouldn't take much more than a couple of months, honestly. Even if you're doing it full time, you should be able to get through it in a matter of about 2 months, I believe. I think it's 8 to 10 weeks, something like that. That's the best case, would be 8 to 10 weeks. And that's if you're fully engaged, moving through each session fairly quickly, but thoroughly. You know, you want to give yourself the time to go through each session and really get out of it what it's intended for, what it's intended to teach you. But 8 to 10 weeks is probably, like I said, the goal. That would be the goal. So 2 months, 2 to 3 months, something like that. And that's if it's taking you longer than that, and you're not working full time, you know, you have otherwise have a full time gig or something like that, then you might be, you know, that's when we start to see people like, oh, they've gotten involved with other programs, they've gotten distracted, maybe life got in the way, those kinds of things. But yeah, I would say 2 to 3 months would be a good target for you to keep in mind. All right, Evan and Chris, I think we're going to tie for how many questions we submitted. I love it. Absolutely love it. This is great. So keep them coming. So Evan's next question, from what I've seen, it seems like a standard best practice to providing a writing outline to the client before writing the first draft. Do you typically provide an outline for the client prior to starting writing? Do you see advantages or disadvantages? There's advantages, Evan, in regards to clarifying. So there's been a lot of talk today about, I feel like I'm not asking enough questions. An outline really brings up more questions, right? So if I create an outline and I send it to my client. And again, it depends on the project. If it's a small project that is, let's say you're writing a blog. We'll use that as an example. If I'm writing a blog and it's maybe a 700 word blog, that's not a big project. It's not a big piece of work. Do you need to do an outline? I think that you would do an outline as you're talking to your client about it to begin with. So I would do an outline while I'm sitting there saying, okay, so tell me about this blog post. How, you know, what are the key points? What are the two or three key points you'd like me to touch on? Is there any research that needs to be done? That kind of thing. Ask about, and then what is there a call to action at the end? Is there a takeaway? Is there a next step? Is there a free offer? Anything like that that you're going to be building into your blog. So from that perspective, to confirm what you've already spoken about, you could do that and do it in outline form. But if it's a smaller project, it might be easier to just skip that piece, write the blog, and then send it to them for first pass editing. If it's something more elaborate, such as an email series or maybe website, something major with a website, either an overhaul or brand new website, all new web copy, an outline would definitely be worth your time. And as you get, Evan, as you get more comfortable working with your clients, this will shake out for you. So try not to be too concerned about these things up front. You go through two projects with a client, with clients, maybe three, and you're gonna know what you need to do. The learning curve isn't huge. Like, oh my gosh, I've worked with 50 clients and I've messed everyone up because I didn't ask enough questions. Not the case. Two projects in, and you're gonna be like, yep, all right, I know what I need to do. It's that piece of this does happen quickly. You're gonna learn better next time. You know, next time I'm going to ask this question. Next time I'm going to make sure I talk about this. So every time you do this, it takes a while. It can take a while, but you know, a couple of projects in, and you're going to have this very comfortably down. You'll be able to answer this question, these questions for yourself in terms of, do I need an outline for this or not? If you want to build that in as a standard part of your routine, a standard part of your process, then go for it. Then that's fine. And again, if it's a white paper, you need an outline. If it's a case study, you need an outline. Those are bigger projects that take more time. If it's a blog, 700 word blog, then maybe not so much. So it really does depend on what it is that the project entails. And Esther, thanks for that. Credit unions are a good no fee option for a bank account. Absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome. All right. Well, I have another question for you guys. And we are about 10 or so after the hour. So I'm going to take a little break here and just ask you, what's been most valuable so far that we've talked about? Is there anything that really stood out that, just as we see in the picture, made that light bulb go off into your head? Like, oh, now I know. Now I know how to do this. I get it. Is there anything in here that we've talked about so far today? We've had excellent questions. You guys have been super supportive and active in the chat. I love it. I also encourage all of you to share your thoughts and experiences. Some of you who are new might not have a lot to share right now. That's okay. But a month from now, you'll be chiming in a little more too. So no worries. You'll be going through the program and having more of these experiences. Great. Evan says it's reassuring to hear that it doesn't take long to know what questions I need to ask up front. Absolutely, Evan. Like I said, go through two, three projects with clients and you'll have a feel for it. And that's one of the things to keep in mind with, because you're all new, you're just getting started. You're building your websites. You're trying to figure out which direction, what your target market's going to look like, all of these things, what's your positioning, trying to develop all of this stuff takes time. But keep in mind that Ed likes to say that you should be 80% there with things like your positioning statement and your web copy. Make sure you're 80% happy with it. because you're never going to get to 100% is almost impossible. So you want to make sure that you're just, you know what, it's good. It's really good. Let's get it. Let's go. Let's get it out there and let's go, because otherwise you're going to get stuck. So as you're developing your website, you're developing your web copy, your positioning statement, all of these things, put together something that's good. Is it excellent? No, might not be, but it's good. It's really, you're happy with it and it's good, and then run with it. Because then what ends up happening with all of this, I can tell you that my website, you saw the first version versus what it looks like today. I mean, I've changed my website several times over the years because I kept, as I started talking to more people, and talking to more people and understanding more of what their needs were and what their pain points were, my web copy changed. Because I was like, oh, I didn't realize that. I'm going to go back and add that. That's kind of cool, because that's, you know, deeper in. I'm getting deeper and deeper into my target market and understanding more and more about what their true pain points are. I want to reflect that in my web copy or my positioning statement or whatever the case may be, wherever I use that. So understand, give yourself permission to not have it perfect right up front, and just understand that you will learn as you start interacting with your target market. You're going to learn a lot in the coming months from them. Shannon says, what's been valuable is to avoid shiny object syndrome and focus in on the one thing at a time. Also, done is better than perfect. Absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes, yes. So for those of you who are getting ready to tackle your website copy, done is better than perfect. And yes, you will change it. Oh my gosh. Now, that being said, I haven't changed my web copy in probably a year or more. But it took me a long time to refine it. And I made many changes. Oh my gosh. When I first pivoted into what I'm doing now, I made many changes because I really started to fine tune. Again, the more I talked with people, the more I realized that's not what they care about. They care about this. This is what I want to be saying on my website. It's going to take a little bit of time. So be patient. Be patient with the process. Esther says, appreciate all the tools discussed to help make the building, make building the business easier. Great. Chris is getting help with my specific client, and hopefully it helped others too. Always, Chris, when you ask questions, even if it's about a specific client, it's okay. Really okay. Because even though others might not be facing that yet, they very well may. And don't forget that, again, this call is recorded. It'll be posted probably by tomorrow. And there's many people that are going to listen to this afterwards too. So we try to cover a lot of bases here. All of that is valuable. Thomas says, what's been valuable is all the communication avenues, these meetings, Facebook, they help me to stay focused and realize I can do it. Absolutely. If there's one thing I can encourage you to do, is to be active on Facebook. Don't hesitate to ask questions. Don't feel like your questions are silly or not worthy or something like that. Ed and I are on in the Facebook group pretty much every day. I'm usually there once a day. We have it kind of spread out so that he covers, and we're both there just looking to see what's going on and who needs help. Take advantage of that. It's brilliant. He's got just so much to share, a lot of wisdom to share. So take advantage of that. That's one of the best places. And you will see him. He'll be on these calls occasionally throughout the course of your time. I do most of the calls, but he steps in and jumps in and loves to talk with all of you as well. So take advantage of these resources. That's what they're here for. That's what you've invested in. So take advantage. All right. Shannon, thanks for that. A lot of awesome takeaways. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear it. Terrific. All right. Well, I've got a final question for you as we wrap up our call today, and that's, what's your top action item? And it might be something that you heard that we talked about today. It might be something that you've been planning to do anyway. Might have something to do with getting through the next session or in the program, maybe working on your website, something along those lines. But tell me what an action item is for you coming up in the next week or so as we wind down 2019. I can't believe we're Well into November already. Holy moly. All right. Sally is going to be studying the first session. Great. That's positioning. Good luck with that. Take your time. It can be challenging, but take your time. Thomas says, send out more emails, research Facebook groups and other avenues for more prospects. LinkedIn groups as well. Don't forget LinkedIn has groups. And send out a set number every day so that you're not feeling overwhelmed. You know, as long as you can set a minimum of email number of emails that you want to send out every day once you get into the warm email prospecting. You said, I meant LinkedIn. Yes, yes, yes. Good. You can do Facebook too. There's no doubt you can do both. Esther's going to continue to prospect. Chris is getting back to my client with specific parameters for his request and finishing session 6. Evan says he's going to prep for the face-to-face meeting with potential client and more prospecting. Great. Yeah, definitely keep us posted with that, Evan, on Facebook. Beth is going to work on session 1, plus learning how to get a tax ID for my business and then setting up a bank account. Great. Good idea. All good stuff. Shannon's finishing up session 3 and submitting a website for review. Yay. And Cynthia's action item is to start session 5 and writing proactive blogs for future use. Awesome. 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 Well, great call today, everyone. Thank you for being here. Thank you for participating and sharing your questions, sharing your ideas with each other. This is a terrific call today, and glad you are here. And we'll see you again in, I think, 2 weeks roundabout. But everybody have a great rest of the day, and I'll see you all on Facebook.